The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Hi, I'm Margie Nomura, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their 7 Desert Island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. The question is, what would you choose as your last meal? Hi, I hope you're all very well and having a lovely week. I had heard many people describe today's guest as one of the nicest men in food, and I have to say, he did not disappoint. I always find it very reassuring and somewhat comforting when very successful people are also incredibly nice. We touch on it lightly, but Jose has 7 restaurants in London alone. He also has a restaurant in Abu Dhabi. And of course, he also has restaurants on board P&O cruises on 6 of the ships, I think. So he really does run an empire. He's a very busy man. And I felt very lucky to get the time to sit down with him and talk all things desert island dishes. I hope wherever you are and whatever you're doing, you enjoy today's episode. And as always, we love to hear your thoughts. My guest today is Jose Pizarro. Jose has been cooking in the UK for over 25 years. He grew up in the outermost western province in Spain and never thought of working in food. In fact, he was all set to become a dental technician before fate intervened. He arrived in the UK in 1999, seeking to expand his horizons as a chef, and has since become one of the industry's best-loved characters. He worked at several Spanish restaurants, including Brindisa, where he was executive chef. And then in 2011, he opened 2 restaurants of his own on Bermondsey Street in southeast London. Both were instant hits. Many more restaurants and cookbooks have followed, all championing Spanish cuisine. In recognition of his extraordinary services to Spain, Pizarro was awarded the Officer's Cross of the Royal Order of Isabella the Catholic by the Spanish ambassador in London. He says when it comes to cooking, he has a mantra: buy the best and don't mess it up. Often described as the godfather of Spanish cuisine in the UK. Welcome, Jose.
Oh, thank you. That is amazing. Thank you for having me. No, it's really a privilege to talk to you, really. Thank you.
It's an honor to have you. And I did slightly change the wording of your mantra. I don't know if you noticed, but did I get the general gist?
You did very well indeed.
One thing that really did come up time and time again in my research was everyone describing you as their favorite chef, most beloved, oozing warmth and charisma. And now perhaps it's unfair, but that's not necessarily typical of a working restaurant chef, which perhaps is what makes you so unusual. Did you ever think of going down the route of being a scary chef?
I was a scary long time ago.
Really?
Yeah, have to say. The first time.
Do you think you've mellowed?
Yeah, I went to mellow, very mellow indeed. I remember when I start, I co-founded Brindisa restaurant 20 years ago now. And I think I was scared of everyone. And you know, when you try to be this kind of macho chef, then you have to be shouting, you have to, because it's the only way they are going to respect you. And definitely it's not the way. Definitely not. I think you get the best from everyone, being nice, try to teach, try to learn from them. And the most important thing is just to be nice with everyone and work together for one reason, is to make your customer happy.
How long do you think it lasted with you trying to be scary?
No long. Definitely no long.
But I think it's because we do have this image of a restaurant chef, and that's kind of how they've been perceived to be. Like, did you watch The Bear?
I was The Bear.
Did you work in restaurants where it was like The Bear?
I work in places like that. They make you feel shit. And not for me. Yeah. I don't, like we say, it's not necessary. And I did to work there. And I ran away from those people as soon as I can.
You are often described as the godfather of Spanish cuisine here in the UK. How do you define Spanish food?
Spanish cuisine is all about simplicity. Spain is all about, to, in terms of food, it's just quality. It's just to feel that you can go to the market and you can just, or to the vegetable garden. It's all that flavor, that smell, that simplicity, that happiness bringing from the producer. Spanish cuisine is very diverse. We are very lucky to have 17 countries in one. The north completely different than south, and the the west and the east. That diversity is incredible. And it's all about the people. It's all about the people and the weather. We need the weather to make the difference, you know? North, cold, south, very hot. And everything in the middle. Quality, simplicity, flavor.
I know you grew up on a hard-working farm, eating your mother's simple but amazing foods. I'm excited to hear about the first desert island dish. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood.
Something I hate it so much.
Okay.
I couldn't see. When I saw my mom cooking that and the smell in the morning, was like, I don't want to wake up. What, lentils with chorizo. That is always are going to be with me forever. And it's something that I adore. I love to cook. I love to eat. It's on my menu now. And I couldn't live without lentils with chorizo. It's something that, yeah.
When do you think that change happened?
I don't know. I think I always loved them. But I was a very kind of naughty boy.
Were you?
Yeah, that I just want to be, mum, I don't like this.
So I've heard you talk a lot about your mum's cooking, and you've said that her kitchen is the restaurant you want to go to for the rest of your life, which is such a nice thing to say, especially given the world that you move in. Obviously, her food sounds amazing, but what do you think it is about a mother's cooking that makes it mean so much to us?
For me, life is all about memories. And for sure, you know, the churros from my mum are the same than the churros for someone else, you know, but it's all those flavors, all of that kind of, you, like we just, I say for lentils, waking up with that smell. And something my mum always did, she was working very hard, and I saw her cooking for us every single day. You know, even something was wrong was something absolutely amazing. I think they are the best. And they make us much better since we are child. My mom was making, and she is still doing, things very simple. And I tried to make the potato omelette that my mom made. I cannot do it.
Right. Yeah, it's so weird, isn't it?
Best,
even if it's exactly
ever.
The same. I know.
We cook next to each other. and I cannot make it. And I think I know more or less how to cook.
Yeah, more or less.
No, she's the best. I think it's the memories we have. When we are a child, we are like a sponge. And we take everything, you know, that smell, that, yeah, memories.
Yeah, I know. Food is so evocative, isn't it? I wonder at what point in our life we stop experiencing stuff for the first time and really start just chasing all the stuff that we already know. Because I feel like that's what we are all doing now, isn't it? Just trying to recreate the things that we loved that you can never recreate. You can never go back to that moment in time, but that's what the food does.
Take you there.
Yeah.
Take you there, definitely.
Yeah. Your parents were very hardworking farmers, and I read that the only time your mother got any time to herself was when she was in the kitchen. And so she used to shoo you out of the kitchen with a slipper. So
she tries sometimes as well. Still, bless her, no way.
I'm very interested to hear the second desert island dish, and that's the first dish you learnt to cook. It's
the Spanish omelette.
Okay.
Very simple. How she make the French omelette, you know, the egg beating. That is what I want to do. It's what my grandfather was having every single dinner. And I just want to learn. You know, I wanted to learn, and I did.
So when did she let you in the kitchen?
I think it will be around 7, 8, probably. Okay. I cook now for Christmas. She is still sitting next to me, watching what I do.
Do you feel stressed?
Yeah. I remember the first time I did lentils here, talking about lentils, the first time she came to Brindisa. And she tried my lentils, and she looked to my dad with that roll in the eyes. She said, "These lentils are not cooked properly."
Did she say that?
Yeah.
But I guess the flip side is when she says she likes something, you know it's very good. Yeah. So what is the secret to the best Spanish omelette?
The egg.
Okay.
That's it. Okay. Forget anything else. You can do that.
What about the potatoes?
No, you are talking about simple egg omelette.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
oh, I see. No. Okay, we're not talking about it with potatoes.
No.
Oh, right. Okay.
It's what I had. And the smell is when you are in that kitchen and you just tiny guy smelling the oil and smelling just when the egg coming in, just, you know, it's nothing complicated, but it's absolutely stunning.
Mm.
You know, my mom was cooking 100 different things, but seeing my grandfather having the omelette was something very special.
Yeah.
Beating the egg, put there, flip, dom.
The ultimate fast food.
It is good.
Yeah, so good. The story goes that you were all set to be a dental technician in Seville, but when you had a summer to spare before your job started, you worked as a kitchen porter and just fell in love with the way of life. Tell me about that.
I love people. I love to be around people. And when I was studying, I passed and I did everything. I found a job in Seville. And the problem for me to be far away from my mom was not be able to have her food. And I want to learn more. And I start doing a course. And when I went to the course, the first thing they take you to a restaurant as a kitchen porter. To learn. I didn't want to be a chef. I want just to learn that time, that 6 months. And I went there and I just see the people. I just see, feel to be around people. The smell coming from the kitchen. I think the adrenaline you see from the kitchen. And for me it was, okay, how are you going to go to my mom and my dad and say to them, mom, dad, I don't want to do that job anymore. I want to be a chef. Mamma mia. Can you imagine what's that?
Because they were very excited about you being a dental technician or because the idea of being a chef was so unknown and they didn't know like how you'd support yourself?
Because I was very bad student.
Okay.
I didn't study much at all. I cannot concentrate well. And in some point my dad told me, Jose, if you don't do something for yourself, you coming back to the farm. I said, what I need to do, what the F I can do, not going back to the farm.
You didn't want to do that?
No. And I'm very good carving. I'm very good with my hands. I have to be concentrated, but it's not like learning.
Mm.
And I passed that very quick.
So you weren't passionate about teeth?
I was not at all. I was not at all. But it was like something I can do for not going back to that. Hard, very hard work. I saw my dad and my mom working every single day, and I didn't want that.
Yeah.
And that was for me the escape. And it's why I say I passed, I did, and got a very good job. And then
that
I
was
went,
all the motivation you needed.
My dad and my mom was very happy. She passed. She had a job.
But I was interested because I read about your ADHD and you say you were dyslexic. So you found the pressures of kitchens where there was so much going on actually helped you to focus.
Absolutely. When I have 4 things to do at the same time, it's when I'm happy.
Really?
I think, yeah. Made me more relaxed.
So how do you relax like in your own time, like at home? Can you relax?
It's very difficult for me to relax. I take my dogs out and I like try to learn more about art. It's something I like.
Yeah.
And just try to read. But watching TV for me is no.
Really?
No, I just, in front of the TV, if, let's Peter say, come on, watch some movie, in 3 minutes, I'm not into and out, you know.
Well, that's a challenge. That's a challenge, isn't it? They've got to get you in that first 3 minutes. We're going to talk about the third desert island dish, and that's the best dish you've ever eaten.
The first thing ever I eat and impressed me so much that I is percebes, goose pinnacles. I remember to be in Ogrove, yeah, and it's in Galicia. And that happened, the same thing happened to me, happened to Peter, the few years after. When you just see that ugly thing, I saw before, of course, but when you see that thing in front of you in real, and it's quite ugly, and you just learn how to open it, and you see, and I'm still thinking that it's the hoop from the elephant, and then when you just put that thing in your mouth, is you just go away and I don't know where. I was diving in the sea, I don't know where. The flavor, the texture changed my life. It's that simple. The simple is good. Simple is good.
I think that's something that people just forget all the time. Mm. Like there's such a temptation to overcomplicate food.
But the simplicity is more difficult than complicated. Mm. But always I say to the team, when you have a very good piece of fish or a very good piece of meat or very incredible simple tomato, it's something, don't touch it. Mm. But when you have a bad tomato, please put a thousand things there. Then it's going to taste, it's not going to taste anyway to anything. Mm. Just bring things in. Simple simplicity is a challenge.
Mm. So you say when you came to London, you were quite shocked at the state of ignorance as far as Spanish food was concerned. What was the food scene like back then? Did it feel an exciting place to be?
I came here to discover different cuisines. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't because I didn't speak in English at all. Can you imagine my accent now, 26 years ago? And when I went to looking for a job. My CV was amazing. I was a head chef in a Michelin star. But of course, no speak English.
So you didn't speak any English when you came?
And I tried different Spanish restaurants. I was like, in the end, I found one. What was going around, or what the perception, more than the quality or whatever was there, was the perception of the people about Spanish cuisine.
Mm.
You know about Indian, Italian, everything. But Spain was the place to go, but the place to go not to maybe not many time to eat. It was a place to go for holiday. I want the sun. I want to have a good time. I want my sangria. And I love sangria. Yeah. I love patatas bravas. And I love everything around that. And it's more than that. And now we know that Spanish cuisine is more than that. And I think here in the UK, we want more.
Mm. When you came over and it became clear that people didn't know enough about Spanish cuisine, did it feel like a light bulb moment, like an opportunity for you to really make a mark and to show us?
I was the time, but really was when I started in Brindisi. Before, for me, I studied in Gaudi. In Gaudi was a Spanish restaurant, want to get the Michelin star, want to do all that kind of mix. When I was there is when I was really worried to say, because people didn't understand was Pimentón de la Vera.
Mm.
People didn't know the client, the customer. And the food that we were doing was very fancy food. And you cannot give fancy food to people when they don't understand the basis.
Mm.
And for me, like, you don't understand what is Pimentón. You don't know what is a very good jamón ibérico. And I felt very sad for me when they compare something that, you know, when jamón ibérico, I was with my ham all over. And people try, customer try and say, wow, this Parma ham is amazing. And it's nothing wrong. Parma ham, I think, is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's not what it's about.
Mm.
I wanted people to understand what we have.
I guess like with any business or project, you've got to come from it from that point of view. Like, it's not enough to just see an opportunity. Like, it actually has to mean something to you. And then that's when you're really going to make a difference and have longevity, I suppose.
I saw...
Like, it's a passion.
It's a passion. It's a, look, everything is a business, you know? But when you do things coming from your heart and do you believe, things are easier.
Yeah, it's such a cliche, and it sounds like it's trite to say it, but it's a cliche for a reason.
It's real, you know? And was opportunity there? Yes. I worked very hard? Yes. I was lucky? Yeah. But the luck took me, catch me when I was working, you know? And I was enjoying it. Was opportunity? Maybe. And I was very lucky. Definitely.
That's interesting, actually, because there's this very famous podcast where one of the questions that they ask everyone, and they say, of the success you've had, how much would you put down to just pure hard work and you and your talent? And how much do you attribute to being in the right place at the right time and a bit of luck? How would you answer that?
I work very hard. That is 50%. Lucky 30%, and the rest, I don't know what it is.
Okay.
But I am one thing I have to say, the people around me, that I will say 50% will be the people are being around me and people we work together, the team being always, or when I was working for someone else,
yeah, you
know, always the team. I've been very lucky to be able to, because maybe I'm not good in many things, I always try to bring very good people together, and working together is when major things happen.
When you came to the UK, I think your plan was to be here for a month, and you only had £250 to your name, and you've been here 25 years. What was it about the UK that you fell in love with?
The diversity.
Was it?
Yeah. For me, we are talking about almost 26 years now, but I was working in Madrid, outside Madrid, and I had the best time ever. Yeah? But if you want to do more in your career, and that time I want to have my 3 Michelin star, I want to be the super chef, you know? In Madrid, it was not that diversity. It was no kind of... many restaurants was very, very, very Spanish, you know? You didn't see many things that you really... And being gay, you know? It was not difficult at all, but it was always something there. I came to London, I arrived to in Victoria, and I don't know why, I just love what I'm seeing here. Yeah.
You loved England the moment that you arrived, and then, as you say, you were finding it slightly hard to find a job, but there was a story I read about you finding a magazine on the floor, which had an advert
Gaudi.
For a job.
Yes. The Gaudi.
Is that really how it happened?
I went to Cambio de Tercio in that time as well. No one offered me a job.
Why?
Because they see my curriculum, my CV, and was like...
Do they think you were overqualified?
I think I was overqualified. Mm. But in that time, I think was plenty of jobs as well.
It's a very strange thing to be overqualified for something, isn't it?
My English, I'm telling you, was nothing.
But you would have thought in a Spanish restaurant that wouldn't have been that big a deal.
Gaudi was the place. Mm. I was there for a year.
And that kind of changed everything.
Changed everything.
We're going to pause there and talk about the most important question of the day. What is your favourite sandwich?
Oh, yeah. Have to be bikini. Yeah. Bikini is very popular in Catalonia. Mm. And it's a sweet ham with cheese, a melty cheese. But we can increase that. Okay. And it's toasted. Oh. If you do a very good Mahon, for example, Mahon cheese, and you do with jamón ibérico, toasted, you can put some truffle in season, and some very good crisps.
Oh,
homemade
yes.
crisps in a very good olive oil is the best sandwich that you can have.
So good.
Definitely. And it's very comforting, but all the flavor, you think... When you're heating up the jamón ibérico, the oils from the ham multiply. Because, as you know, it's all the flavors coming from the acorn.
Yes.
That kind of nuttiness with the manchego or any mahon, any cheese that you want to put. and really fragrant truffle and nice crispy crepes.
If you were to have that in a restaurant, or you know, would they serve it with the crisps?
Yeah, I'm serving my place with crisps.
Okay,
it's in my bed. It's in my. It's in
and you're allowed. Okay, that's not frowned upon.
Have to be. No.
Okay. What is your general feelings about crisps and sandwiches?
I think goes very well.
Yeah.
We love it, but please, a good crisps. Don't give me any truffle, any. How do you call caviar? Don't give me any jamon truffle, jamon flavor in crepes. What the?
That's one way to really make you angry.
Yes, and I'm not easy to make me angry. No, when I am.
Yeah. Okay, so what do you think about like a Wotsit or a Monster Munch?
What is that?
Oh. Like a really basic British crisp. Have you never had a Monster Munch?
Yeah, okay. I think so. Yeah. Was that packet like, of crisps?
Yeah, but they kind of look like, I think that it's like a monster's claw.
No,
I
don't have those.
No, you haven't had that. No. Okay, after this,
I have
I'll buy
to.
A bag.
Please remind me to buy one right now.
I don't want that to be like my, how you think of me. Like,
no,
I'm
no.
not saying that. No, that's,
I don't.
I'm just...
I don't feel like that, but... I'm very simple. Give me a good crisps in olive oil or whatever oil is fried, and that's it. Happy Jose.
So good. Your restaurants are all odes to Spain and Spanish cuisine. Is there a difference between a Spanish restaurant in London versus a Spanish restaurant in Spain? Like, do you have to cater to the English palate in a way that you wouldn't for your restaurants in Spain?
Definitely, I don't do in mine. I was chatting with someone yesterday and they say, wow, I can have better food here than in Spain. I say, maybe you don't look in Spain properly. when he was in my restaurant,
yeah.
He said, it's very good Spanish restaurant in Spain, of course, and it's a very good Spanish restaurant in many places in the world.
So you could pick up one of your restaurants, put it into Spain, and it would just fit seamlessly, and
yeah.
Presumably that was your goal.
What made me very happy, Jose, I say, is when people cross the door, they cross the door in Jose, my first place, and they say, I feel like to be in Spain. That is a tick for me.
Yeah. We're going to pause there and talk about the fifth desert island dish. What's the dish you eat the most often?
I think rice in every single way.
Every day?
Not every day, but I have to be minimum three times a day. A week can be easily. How I'm here as well, but more when I'm in Spain, I disappear. I can be cooking lunch for Peter and myself, two people, for 3 hours.
Oh,
and
really?
It's only a simple rice. For me, it's just how I do the stock. How I prepare everything. That is something that made me relax for once, maybe.
That's so interesting because, yeah, speaking to people who cook professionally, that isn't necessarily always the case. They don't find it relaxing or they don't enjoy cooking at home, but you do.
Yeah, I do. I think you coming from home, from work, you know, it's all about numbers, it's all about grams, it's all about... You go home and it's just about... good food.
Yeah.
And a glass of wine. I never drink when I'm working. When I have my glass of wine, it's job done.
Yeah. That was going to be one of my questions because being an amazing chef is a very different quality to being an amazing restaurateur. What is the secret to running not one, but many successful restaurants? And you've, you know, survived the last 10 years, which has been so turbulent and the most challenging time to run restaurants. What has been your...
Way for the next year. Wow. It's going to be tough.
What I know. But what has been your secret to being both of those things?
I think to know what you want, to work for that, and always people you have around you. Look after people, listen to people, and sometimes take very difficult decisions, but you need to go for it. People esteem the family is what make a success. It's not about me. It's not, and always I say, you know, it's not, it's It's all about people you have around that.
It's the people. Mm. How important, I mean, we hear it all the time, location, 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 but how important is that when you're choosing a restaurant? Do you decide where you want to be? Like, what comes first and how important are those elements?
I definitely think very important. Don't it is.
Have you made any bad decisions on that front?
No. I'm lucky I didn't have to close any restaurant yet.
Yeah, touch
wood,
touch
wood. Where is that to touch? I remember when I opened Jose the first time, the first restaurant in Bermondsey Street. Mm. Bermondsey, everyone know about Bermondsey now. Mm. 13 and a half years ago, no one knew about Bermondsey. Not just that, people didn't want to go there. Mm. I was very lucky, but I saw as well what was happening around. I was living around there.
Okay.
And I said, this is the area I can, because the money I had from selling my shares in Brindisa, I think this is the area is growing. It's a lot of young people. We are 10 minutes walking from the river. I saw that can be a good place to be.
Mm. And you work. Were really early.
Definitely. The space is important. Mm.
I read one thing that said that you and your restaurants were responsible for what happened to Bermondsey.
Bermondsey, I was lucky. I was lucky. I picked up, well, whatever it was, because I didn't have any money to open anywhere else. But I remember when I opened Jose, it was a big success. It was May 2011. And then we opened Pizarro in December 2011.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 6 months.
Yeah.
And the Y Cube opened in October 2011.
Wow.
That was like, what? When I hear that Jose was already open, say, what is going on here? Say, they open something. And they say, Y Cube is opening here. Was for me, was like,
yes.
And lucky enough, I can say the Y Cube, my restaurant, the canteen from the Y Cube team, and the Y Cube artist. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Lucky.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You've said lucky, but I mean that it's like, is that luck or that's, you know,
yeah,
had a lot of a lot of foresight and, yeah, you know.
It was a tough decision to open there, I have to say. I had business partner in that time.
So well, they took a lot of convincing.
Yeah, they are not with me anymore.
Okay. We're on to the sixth Desert Island dish. What's your go-to dinner party dish? Do you get to throw a lot of dinner parties?
I love to.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I love dinner parties. This year we didn't do, I've been so traveling so much. I didn't many. It's depending on the person.
Mm.
Something there have to be, is jamón ibérico, you know. Have to be there because everyone loves it.
Yeah.
And rice, I love rice to cook. It's easy, I have everything ready more or less.
You're pretty organized when you have someone coming around. Like, you know what you're doing. Everything's prepped before they arrive.
It's prep, but not done.
Okay. So you're cooking as you're talking.
The thing is, people think when you come into your house as a chef, they are going to be like in a restaurant.
Yeah. And it's completely different.
No.
Otherwise, you just come home to my restaurant.
It's our home.
Yeah.
We cook what we love to eat. You know, and that's it.
Do you get invited to lots of dinner parties?
No.
Do you know? Do you think people are scared?
Yeah, I think people don't like to invite chef because it's criticized. And seriously, I think chef, we are the most thankful ever.
Yeah.
You know, just go there and anything.
Yeah.
And you can see people really try.
Yeah.
Maybe they are good or maybe they are not, but you really need to thankful because I know how difficult it is.
When you're doing a dinner party, what would you serve for pudding typically?
For pudding, always I'm quite sweet enough.
Okay.
I don't like pudding, but good thing, Peter is very good with that.
Oh, so what would Peter make?
Peter has a most famous bitter cake than being in all my restaurant.
Oh, what is it?
It's kind of a tarta de Santiago. That is the almond cake. Mm. And he did it in pandemia and in Spain he smashed it. And it's his job.
Yeah.
And he does very well.
On Desert Island Dishes, we have a cookbook corner. So I'd love to know, what is your most treasured cookbook?
It's something, someone I love and respect. That is Claudia Rodham.
Mm.
Food of Spain.
She's the greatest.
See, Look, talking about her, I'm very lucky enough to say that she's my friend.
That is lucky.
And that book, as all her books, are very well researched. She put everything in that book. I don't say that we don't do, but how she treating, how she write, how she express, how she see the north, the south, how she catch the people in that book.
She does get a lot of recognition, but she deserves so much more. She's the greatest.
I don't think she want more recognition.
No, she wouldn't want more, but I know what you mean,
but she deserves more.
Yeah, she does. Well, on to the final seventh desert island dish. What is the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island?
Definitely lentils with chorizo.
Okay,
come on, have to be there. Is the goat stew from my mom. That is something that is big. It's the whole thing. It's like the dish in your family. It's the dish for very good memories. It's the dish for Christmas. It's when, you know, that is the flavor. And she is still doing better than me.
Is that what you would have at Christmas?
We have Christmas day.
Okay.
Yeah, we have Christmas day. And we had that one for, since I remember.
Maybe you're not going to have a pudding before you go to the island.
Pudding.
Or you could have cheese. Well, how do you
cheese,
want?
Cheese, have to
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
Good cheese. And then I will have a nice coffee, espresso, ristretto, with a very good piece of chocolate, dark chocolate.
Very nice.
And a brandy.
Yeah. Perfect.
Will leave with that.
Yeah. With that, we're going to send you to the island. Those are your desert island dishes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Being absolutely amazing. Thank you.
So there we have it, another delicious day of Desert Island Dishes. Don't forget to follow the show wherever you're listening so you never miss an episode. And if you don't already, come and follow me on Instagram at Desert Island Dishes, or you can sign up for the newsletter and find a whole host of different recipes at desertislanddishes.co. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.